Hari Om to all of you. Okay, last week we stopped at chapter 3, verse number 23. And what we have covered so far, in this chapter, which is entitled Karma Yoga, Krishna did not just want to tell Arjuna, go and fight this battle, go and do your duty. But Krishna wanted to explain to Arjuna what is the glory of Karma Yoga. When we understand the glory of performing our duty, then it makes so much more, so much more significance, right? If we understand why should we do our duties, why we should not abandon our duties, when we understand the significance of it, then it makes so much more difference in discharging all our duties. So Krishna wanted to explain to Arjuna that by doing your duties, which is Karma Yoga, doing your duties with right attitude is called Karma Yoga, it is a holistic way of progressing spiritually. You will progress spiritually provided you know the right attitude in doing all your duties, in taking up all your responsibilities. So in verse number 19, he told Arjuna, always efficiently doing your duty, very important, without attachment. That is a very important thing, because we are doing our duties. It is not that we are not doing, but the attitude has not been corrected. So if we correct our attitude and discharge the same duties, what is the attitude? With detachment. And what do we mean by detachment? What do you mean by detachment? First of all, you are doing your duties for who? For God. So every duty is a what we call an offering to the Lord. I am not doing for the world. I am not doing for my family. I am not doing for myself. I am doing for the Lord. So in that light, we have to see all our duties. Every duty becomes an offering, which is called Ishvara Arpanam. And I also must understand that when I am doing my duty, the result can be favorable or unfavorable. But because I have done every duty as an offering to God, the result becomes a, comes from where? Comes from God. So I accept the results with a attitude of Ishvara Prasada. So that is what is called doing your duty without attachment. What is the result? Krishna says in verse number 19, the Purusha, that person who follows my teachings, Apnoti, attains what? Param, attains the supreme. Not moksha. You cannot attain moksha by just doing your duty. What do you attain? By doing your duty as Karma Yoga, what do you attain? Purify the mind. With the purified mind, you attain knowledge. With knowledge, you attain moksha. So the ultimate goal will be there. You will attain moksha. Now, whenever Krishna talks about detachment, doing all our duties with detachment, most of us have this concept in our mind that we cannot be detached, we cannot detach ourselves unless we give up everything, we renounce everything. We give up family, we give up home, we give up possessions, and we go and take to a ashram life. But what Krishna wants to say, that detachment is not physical, detachment is mental. It is a mental attitude. It is not physically detaching. I can physically detach myself from all my possessions, my family, my house. I can go and sit in an ashram, and where is my mind? At home. That's why there was a man who went to see a sage, and this man said, I don't know what you Swamiji's all do. What do you all do every day actually? So the Swamiji said, nothing, I sleep, I get up, I take my bath, I eat my breakfast, I do my work. So then the man said, what is difference between your life and my life? I also do the same. I sleep, I get up, I take my breakfast, I go to work. No. The Swamiji say, when I work, I work. When I sleep, I sleep. When I eat, I eat. Then the man says, Swamiji, you are trying to make a fool out of me like a monkey. When I eat. When I work, I also work. Then what is the difference? Yeah, when I sleep, I also sleep. The Swamiji said, no. When you sleep, you are dreaming. When you are working in the office, you are thinking about the house. When you are in the house, you are thinking about the office. When you are eating, your mind is running somewhere. Meaning what? I am totally engaged in the action I am doing. Whereas you are engaged in the action, but your mind is running all over the world. So many of us think that, is it possible to be detached while being in a household, being a grihas? Majority of us are in this situation. Is it possible to live such a life of detachment? So in verse number 20, immediately Krishna gives the example of Janaka Kadaya. Janaka and others. It is not only King Janaka. King Janaka had a whole kingdom to run. Yet he was already a purified person. He had already done all the karma yoga, done his duty, purified himself. Janaka was also a man of knowledge. Many Brahmins went to him to gain knowledge. And in the scriptures, there is another famous character called Ajatashatru, A-J-A-T-S-A-T-R-U, Ajatashatru, who is mentioned in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishads. And Ajatashatru was the king of a kingdom also. He had a vast kingdom to run. And to this king one day came a Brahmin sage called by the name of Gargi. It's a very famous sage in the Upanishads. But Gargi had an ego. He thought he had all the knowledge. So he approached King Ajatashatru, who himself was a very realized person. But just like Janaka, he carried on doing all his duties in the kingdom. And Gargi came and told this king, I am here to give you knowledge, superior knowledge, knowledge of Brahman. I want to give you that knowledge. So he had that pride, that ego in him. So the king said, I am very pleased you come to my court. If you give me this knowledge, I will award you 1,000 cows. So those days, cows were more valuable than other things. So he said, I'll give you 1,000 cows. And so Gargi started to give him the knowledge. But every knowledge that Gargi gave him, the king had some kind of, he had his own opinion that the sage could not answer these questions. And eventually the sage realized that actually this king is more highly realized than I. And he surrendered to the king and said, I accept you as my teacher. Please teach me about this great Brahma Jnana. So like that, what Krishna wants to say, there are many people, many examples, Janaka Kadaya, Janaka, many others, who while remaining in the household, perform all their duties. They were purified people. They were men of superior knowledge. So they did not need to perform action to purify themselves because they were already purified. They did not need to perform their duties to attain knowledge because they had already attained knowledge. Therefore, why did they carry on doing their duties? Krishna introduced in this verse 20 the word loka samgraha. Loka meaning the world, samgrahan meaning for the benefit or welfare of the world. To uplift others, to uplift society, they carried on doing their duties to set an example to others that how we can live a detached life while being in a household environment. So it is possible. It is not necessary for us to leave our household and take up ashram sannyasi. Only thing we have to change is our attitude. Carry on the same work, change your attitude. So Krishna gave the example of Janaka and he says, why these people carried on doing their duties? In verse 21, he introduced a term called Shrestas. Shrestas meaning a great people. These are the people who don't need to work for themselves. They don't need to work for their purification, for their spiritual upliftment. they work for the upliftment of society. By setting an example, these people become great role models in society. They inspire people to do their work with the right attitude and uplift ourselves spiritually. So they are considered as Shrestas. And we need the right role models in society. If not, what will society follow? The wrong role model. So these role models are very important. Imagine if everybody becomes sannyasi, goes to the ashram, then what kind of examples are we going to follow? So in society, we need the right people also to set an example to us. Okay. Then in verses 22 and 23 and 24, Krishna said, look at me also as an example. At least Janaka and the other kings, they had some work to do. They had some duties to do. But what about Krishna? What duty does he have? What does he have to do? Does he need dharma? He does not need to attain dharma because he is embodiment of dharma. Does he need to satisfy any kama desires? No, he has no desires. Does he need to gain any possessions, artha? Because why? He says, Trishu Lokeshu Kimchana. I am the lord of all the three worlds. Everything belongs to me. So what is there for me to acquire also? And does Krishna need moksha? Does he need moksha? No. Why? He is already the Lord Himself. He is the very embodiment of moksha. So neither does he need dharma, kama, artha, moksha. Then why does he come? In chapter 4 he says, Sambhavami yuge yuge, the very famous verse. In every yuga I take some avatar, some incarnation. So why do I come? If I have nothing to do actually, I have nothing to gain, I have nothing to lose also if I don't take incarnation, yet why do I come? Krishna says, because to set an example to the society also. In verse number 25 he says, should I not ever engage myself in action, other people also will follow my path. So I come, I set the right example to society. So that's why when we read the stories of Krishna, how he brilliantly played all his roles marvelously, when he was required to play a role of a charioteer, he played the role of a charioteer. When he was required to be a guru, he was a great guru. When he also played a role as a son to his parents, he freed his parents from the clutches of Kamsa. So every role he played effectively. He did not say, I am the lord of the world, why should I be a charioteer, why should I wash the horses, why should I feed the horses, why should I be a guru, what have I got to gain? I come and give lecture, I gain nothing, isn't it? Because I am doing it for what? To set an example to uplift society. So that's why when we read what we call Puranas like Srimad Bhagavatam, where we are told all the stories, the past stories of Krishna, all the what we call the good deeds that he did, the dharmic life that he read, it is to inspire us. And that's why they call Ramayana as Ramayana, which means what? Way of Rama. Ayana means way. Rama. So we can learn from the examples of Rama. In fact, so many beautiful stories. One wonderful story was told about Lakshman. When Sita was kidnapped, she left behind certain ornaments. She threw her earrings, necklace, and what do you call it? Anklet, there so that they can find her. And when these three things were discovered and they were shown to Lakshman, and he was asked, can you identify whether these three belong to Sita? And what a beautiful reply Lakshman gave. You know what he said? What did he say? I can only identify the anklet that belongs to Sita. Why? Because I never looked up at her in that way. I never cast my eyes upon her. Whenever I saw her, I cast my eyes downward. So such beautiful examples we learn, that such kind of purity was in people. Such kind of purity was in people that they had a righteous way of living. So Krishna also says that I come to set an example. And if I don't do the function which I'm supposed to do, if I just choose my duties according to what I like, what I dislike, which is what most of us do. We have duties, but we like to choose between what I like to do and what I dislike to do. I avoid what I dislike. So in verse 24, Krishna says, if I do not perform my actions, what happens? Ime loka, in these worlds, utsi deyu, it will be ruined. The people in this world will be ruined. How will they be ruined? Because they follow the example of these role models in society. And if these role models don't do their duty efficiently and effectively, then people will use them as an example also and avoid doing their duties. As we discussed last week, that the whole humanity has been divided into four categories. What are the four categories? Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras. And there is one category of differentiation. We should all take up our profession in accordance with, how do we choose our profession? With the nature of our gunas also. So this caste system, so-called caste system, we discussed last week, is not man-made, but it is God-made. It is God's system. In chapter 4, Krishna will say, this caste system is Maya Shrishtam. It is my system. It is my creation, but it is based on what? Gunas and karmas. And therefore, according to our gunas, we take up the right role and play our roles in society. But if I don't choose based on my gunas, then I take up all my duties based on what? Either you can either take up your duties based on gunas, or you can take up a profession based on family, but never ever should you take up a profession based on
money,
isn't it? So I want maximum pay for minimum work, right? So similarly, because we always feel that everybody else's duty is more easier, just like we discussed last week, the Brahmana, the Brahmacharya, the what we call bachelor feels, who has the most wonderful life? The married man, the Grihas, right? But the Grihas feels, who has the more better life?
The Brahmacharya.
And everybody feels that the sannyasi has the most relaxed life. But the sannyasi says no, because I have to make my food, I have to get up in the morning, I have to chant the mantras, so it looks like the Grihas fellow's family life is more better. So everybody, in every stage of life, there will be challenges, there will be favorable, unfavorable work. There will be likes, there will be dislikes. Not everything in our way of duty is pleasurable. But yet Krishna says, if everybody starts choosing and giving up duties based on what I like and what I dislike, he says, he uses the word here, Samkarashya. Samkarashya means there will be total confusion of caste. People will simply take up whatever profession, abandon that profession, run away to another profession, because they are following their likes and dislikes. The best example is Arjuna, who came to the battlefield as a Kshatriya to fight this battle, which is a dharmic battle. His duty was to fight the battle, but instead he wanted to give up his duty and take up the duty of a sannyasi. Why? Because he felt that in sannyas I don't have to kill. So to avoid killing, I run away from the battlefield. But in sannyas also, there are responsibilities, there are duties. One has got to have to do certain things in a certain way also. So one should not just give up your duty, but accept all challenges in life. So therefore Krishna says, if I do not perform my action, I will create confusion of caste and eventually end up destroying people. One thing we must understand about this destruction of society is not going to happen overnight, isn't it? Just like if we violate our eating habits, supposing every day I eat nasi kandar, mutton, I eat all this heavy, heavy, oily food, I am not going to fall sick within 1 or 2 weeks. But if I carry on eating the unhealthy food for 10 years, 15 years, what's going to happen? Then I will see the effects later. Similarly, if one person violates dharma, you're not going to see a destruction in society. But if more and more people slowly start violating dharma because they don't have the right role models in society, eventually what is going to happen? It is going to cause a total destruction and downfall in society. So in fact, Krishna does say in chapter 4 that one of the reasons he also has come and taken this Krishna avatar is what? What is the main purpose he came to take this Krishna avatar? To uplift mankind, how? By giving the knowledge which was lost. He said, I gave the knowledge at the beginning of creation, but as this knowledge was passed from guru to student, somewhere along the way it got lost. It got less and less practice. So the main reason that Krishna took this avatar is to give us back this knowledge on what is the rightful way to live our lives in order to save and protect mankind also from destruction. So here also Krishna says that if I don't do my duty, I will create confusion among the people, and eventually as more and more people follow adharma, I will cause the destruction of society also. And that's why we see such things happening here. When a person who is Vaishya by nature is born in a family of Kshatriyas, that means politicians or administrators, and he is forced to take up the duty of a Kshatriya, but he has got the nature of a businessman, what do you think he will do? Will turn politics or administration into business. Similarly, if a Vaishya takes up the duty of a Brahmana, if he is born in a Brahmin family, but his nature is of a Vaishya, what do you think he will do to the Brahmin profession? He will turn it into a business. Right? So we are already seeing this happening. We are wondering why people are taking this profession, but they are not acting in accordance to this profession. They are actually violating their own profession. Yet they are very happy doing this kind of job. Right? Confusion of caste.
The colleges are run by businessmen. Educational institutions are run by businessmen.
But to make a profit is one thing, but to exploit again, that's even worse. And we see exploitation of labor, etc. This is what is happening basically. So, up to that, Krishna explains that why these great people, it is possible to live a life of detachment as a householder. Number two, how these people who have come before have set an example to teach us how to live our life with detachment in the nature of a grihas as a householder. Okay, then we come to verse number 25. Now, in verse number 25 here, Krishna compares now two type of people. What are the two type of people? In verse 25, you will see the first line, avidvamso. The word avidvamso means an ignorant person. That is one type of person in society. What is the second type of person? If you go down to the third line, the word vidvams is used. So one is vidvams means a wise person. And when we put in Sanskrit the a in front of that word, it takes the completely opposite, which means a ignorant person. So in this verse, Krishna is comparing the life of an ignorant person to the life of a knowledgeable or wise person. What is the difference? Here Krishna says that both of them do their duties. It is not that the ignorant person does not do his duties. He also takes care of the family. He also gives charity. He also goes to work. The wise person also does the same type of duties. But what is the difference between an ignorant and a wise person doing their duty? The difference only is attitude, which is ignorant people act with attachment. The wise people act without attachment. So both are doing duties, but the attitude is different. Now, knowing this, if the attitude is different, and why is the attitude different? Because through all our actions, as we discussed last week, through all our actions, what are we trying to attain? By whatever actions that we do, whether we look after a family, whether we go to work, whether we buy new things, through all our actions, ultimately we are trying to attain only one thing, that is called happiness. Therefore, the ignorant person continues working and working and working to attain happiness. Through all actions, searching for that elusive happiness. So the question is, what is it that drives a wise person? If he is not searching happiness, what is the driving factor for a wise person to act, to do all his duties? To set an example to society, which he also says in verse number 25, he uses the same thing, loka samgraham. He also does all his action to uplift society, to set an example to society. But mainly a wise person is not searching for happiness, he is acting out of happiness. So an ignorant person acts for happiness, a wise person acts out of happiness. He has already discovered the happiness within. He has found the fulfillment. His mind is attached to God. His mind is not attached to world. His mind is attached to God. With the mind attached to God, he carries on doing all his duties, offering every action to God and accepting every result as a prasadam from God. Therefore, the happiness is already there. The mind is not agitated. The mind is not disturbed. Out of happiness, I discharge all my duties. So Krishna says here, such is the difference between a person who acts for happiness and one who acts out of happiness. That is the difference between a ignorant person and a what we call a wise person. Don't take a call. Maybe it's urgent in case. No problem. Okay. So now, if that is the case, and if that is the case, if a wise person is acting for happiness, what is the wise person also supposed to do? How is he supposed to inspire the ignorant people? How is he supposed to inspire? And if we look at the example of the Kauravas, they also came to the battlefield, but they were fighting for what purpose? Pandavas came to the battlefield, Kauravas also came to battlefield. Both are doing their duty. As a soldier, both were discharging their duties. But what is the difference between the Kauravas and the Pandavas in their actions? What was the difference?
They were dharmic. They were following the path of dharma.
So, the Kauravas were acting inspired by greed, by jealousy, by envy, by ego, and because of that they were fighting the war. Whereas the Pandavas came to the battlefield, they were also doing the same action, but they were inspired only to uphold dharma, to fight and protect for dharma. So that is the difference between the Pandavas and the Kauravas fighting on the same battlefield. That is how the difference is between how the ignorant and the wise people do their actions. So if the ignorant people act with attachment and the wise people act without attachment, how are the wise people supposed to uplift the ignorant people? And that answer Krishna gives us in verse number 26. Therefore, sometimes when we gain knowledge, when we have this knowledge, we want to try to influence other people. We want to try to, convey our knowledge to people. You know, supposing now you come to Gita class and you learn now that if I give charity with ego, I am not going to get any punyam. But if I give charity without ego, I get punyam. Okay? Now you go and tell an ignorant person, I went to Gita class last Thursday and you know you are giving charity with so much ego, better you don't give charity with ego. You know what he'll give up? He won't give up ego, he'll give up giving charity itself. So that's why when people come to Gita class, we never tell them give up desire, give up desire, give up all your desire. In fact, what will give up? They will give up Gita class itself. Every time coming, they will be lecturing only about giving up desires. So, what he is basically trying to tell us here in this verse number 26, that these ignorant people are driven by desires, ego, envy, pride, jealousy, but they are carrying on various kind of activities. They are also contributing, they are doing the danam, charity, they are going to temples, everything they are doing. Do not, Krishna says, do not unsettle the mind of ignorant people. Don't go and lecture them, don't waste your time lecturing them, because it can be counterproductive. So what you should do, he says, that enlightened person should get them to perform all their duties. Doesn't matter, give charity, even your ego, give charity. Whatever you are doing, carry on. Why you carry on? But as you also set an example through your actions, slowly you try to change them by setting an example. Therefore, as they say, actions speak louder than words. So instead of lecturing these people, that's why many people come to Gita class and they ask this question. You know, this person is not doing things according to what I've learned I should be doing. Shall I go and explain to him? Better don't go and explain. Because they are not ready. They have ego. They have pride. They have all kinds of impurity. How to remove this? The only way to remove this is by doing actions. Not by knowledge, because they are not ready for knowledge. So leave them alone. Don't confuse them with knowledge. But let them carry on all their duties, let them carry on all their action. When they are ready, in fact, if we examine our own lives, how did we come to this knowledge? How did we come to this knowledge? We did not suddenly have an interest when we were born. Straight away we wanted Gita knowledge, isn't it? Our parents took us to temples, we did rituals, we did prayers, we did some charity. Slowly that dawned in us that there must be something beyond this. So we also came naturally to this path also. It is not an overnight jump into knowledge. Similarly, these people also must not be confused. They also must be asked to carry on their action. Do not disturb them. Set a right example to them and let them slowly come to knowledge. Right? So let them pursue artha. Let them pursue kama. But minimum what you should do? By your actions, slowly introduce dharma. So, pursue kama, let the ignorant person pursue kama, let them pursue chasing after all possessions, chasing after all desires, but through your actions, you introduce to them dharma. So, they slowly add a bit of dharma to their life also. And then, when they also add dharma to their life, slowly they will purify themselves and come to jnanam also. It is only a question of time also. Same with setting an example instead of preaching. So the only way you can take the world away from adharma is by setting a right example to them. Right? So here he says, a jnani should not tell or lecture people to give up certain things. And you see, when we come to the path of jnanam, to this path of knowledge as a householder, previously, we may have been doing a lot of rituals, a lot of prayers, etc. We may be chanting mantras, etc. Therefore, if once we come to jnanam, what do? We don't cut off prayers, rituals, etc. But what we do?
Reduce.
We reduce the time spent on rituals, prayers, temples and all that. We take that extra time and devote to jnanam. So, gradually you have to come to jnanam. You don't drop prayers and rituals. You reduce that time and put the extra effort into jnana. So these people also slowly have got to be led by example also. Right? Okay. So Krishna says that is the way that get them to perform all their duties by setting an example to them. Okay. So now he has completed basically the discussion on karma yoga. And in the next two verses, which are very profound verses, 27 and 28 here, Krishna wants to explain to us what is the next step, how should one progress after karma yoga, what is the next step. And the very important thing here, when we come to verse 27 and 28, is our progress from karma yoga to jnana yoga. What is this knowledge going to change our attitude in all our actions. And there is a very, what you call, in Shankara's commentary, Viveka Chudamani, he talks about four very important qualities that all of us must develop. I think did I mention about these four qualities? One was Viveka. Did I mention this? One was Viveka. That means we must use our intellect, our discriminative power. We must develop this discriminative power. It is called Viveka. Let me just write it down. I don't know whether I discussed here or in other class. Did I discuss here? Okay. So one was Viveka. The second was Vairagya. Vairagya means once I have this power of discrimination, I know what is at the initial stage. How do we use our power of discrimination? In the initial stage, what should we learn to discriminate from? What is dharma? What is adharma? So that is at the first stage. I should be very clear what are dharmic actions, what are adharmic actions. What take me towards God and what takes me away from God. Then as I come higher, how do I use this Viveka? How do I use this Viveka? At the lower stage it is dharma and adharma. What is the higher stage of Viveka? What is real and what is unreal? What is changing and what is unchanging? I should have this power of discrimination. I should start understanding that. Which part of me is changing, unreal? Which part of me is non-changing, which is real? So that is Viveka. With Viveka then comes Vairagya. Because once I understand what is unreal, what is changing, then I detach myself slowly away from that. I do not depend upon the external world. I do not depend upon this body. I don't get attached. Instead, I get detached. Why? Because by Viveka, I understand what is real and what is unreal. So that is Vairagya. Then comes the third stage. Once I have this understanding of the what is real and unreal, once I have this Vairagya, the detachment, automatically will arise the third level, which is attachment to the real, which is called mumukshutvam, which is desire for moksha, desire to detach myself away and attach to the detach from lower and attach to the higher. And then the fourth quality that Shankara talks about is shatka sampati, which is the six qualities which I have to develop, which is control of senses, control of mind, etc., etc. What we call Shraddha, faith, there are many qualities that he discusses. Basically, divine qualities that we have to cultivate, which will help us on our spiritual path. Now, the question comes is, how do I first develop this Viveka? How do I develop this Viveka? How do I gain this knowledge? What type of actions? Since Viveka is the first most important thing, how do I develop this attitude of discrimination? How do I sharpen my intellectual capacity? So in Ramayana there is a beautiful verse given. It says in the Ramayana, Bina satsang Viveka na hoye. Our Vivek cannot be awoken unless we engage in satsang. And what we are doing now is exactly satsang. So you must engage yourself continuously by listening to this knowledge, by going to the right places, by cultivating, by receiving this knowledge. You cannot sit at home and get Viveka suddenly. Of course, somebody might get, maybe your past karmas have been very good, but we have to put effort to go for satsang. Wherever the Swamijis come, they come and give talks and lectures, wherever we can expose our intellect to this kind of knowledge. Continuously exposing ourselves to this knowledge, only we can awaken this intellect within us. There is only one way to sharpen your intellect, and that is through receiving knowledge. Sravanam and mananam. reflecting on this knowledge. Now the question is, Ramayan says, Binu satsanga viveka na hoy. Vivek cannot happen if you don't engage in satsang. Okay. Since you are not asking me the question, I'll ask you the question. How do you get satsang? How do you get the company of the right people? Company of sages and saints. The opportunity to go for satsang. How do you get it? Realization will come later, isn't it? Realization can only come after you receive the knowledge. You can only receive the knowledge if you go for satsang. But how will you get the opportunity to go for satsang?
Joining the right company.
You look for it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the opportunity doesn't come.
You have to go and search for it.
But first you have to have the desire or the longing.
Right. So, Raman says, first Binu satsang viveka na hoy. Then it tells you, Binu Rama Kripa Sulabh na soy. You cannot easily get satsang also, the company of great saints and sages, without the grace of God. You need the grace of God to grant you this opportunity to get satsang. Then the third question will come. How do I get the grace of God? So, who gets the grace of God? Binu viveka, binu satsanga viveka na hoye, Ram kripa binu, sulabh na soye. It's not easy to get this satsang without the grace of God. Okay, third question, how do I get the grace of God? Right. So, by my right actions, I get the grace of God. When I get the grace of God, He will grace me by giving me the company of sages and saints. With the company of sages and saints, I acquire knowledge. With knowledge, I gain moksha. So, it all starts with our right actions. That's why we should not ask, how do I go about searching the Guru? You do the right actions, you will get the grace of God. By the grace of God, you will get the right Guru in your life. Right? So it all starts with our right actions to gain the grace of God, which is very beautifully explained in the Ramayana. So what is the knowledge here that we have to attain? It is explained to us in verse number 27 and 28. Again, this knowledge that we have to gain. That's why I'm trying to remember that. Let me remember that. Okay. Binu satsang viveka na hoy. Ram kripa. Binu sulabh na soy. Okay, I'll try to remember that. Okay. Where was I?
But there are so many gurus.
So many what?
So many gurus.
Right.
We are not running after them.
You're not running after
them. We are not.
You mean there are so many good gurus now, but we are not, we don't have access to them. What you are saying is,
we are not going there anymore.
You are not going there because you haven't got the grace of God. Why you haven't got the grace of God? Because you have not done sufficient good karmas. So you have to accumulate good karmas to get the grace of God. When you get the grace of God, you will get all the company of these great saints and sages. So they are there. It is not the saints and sages are not there, but somehow or other that interest, it's not only that, the desire to go and attend spiritual discourses is not in everybody, right or not? If you go to a hall, you see how many people are there attending. Many people know that there are spiritual discourses going, but how many people have the desire to drive themselves there and go and listen? So that desire arising in us is by the grace of God. And why God has given us that grace? Because of our very good actions also.
But sometimes you're attracted to one and you feel you're going there more and you're not going to be another place.
You see, you have to choose where. Sometimes also not a lot of people do this habit of guru shopping. Right or not? See which guru is better also. So sometimes you have to go a few places until you find something that clicks with you, and then you have to stay on that course. Then don't get distracted. Okay, so we come now to verse number 27. What is the essence of verse 27 basically? Is the teachings of the Upanishads, the crux or the very essence of the teachings of the Upanishads, that tell us that in every individual there are two eyes. Eyes meaning with the self, that means the alphabet eye. Okay? Not EYE, but the alphabet eye. So in every individual there are two eyes. We are a combination of two components. Right, and there are many types of terminologies given to these two components. You will come across this even in the Bhagavad Gita and also in various Upanishads. But basically what they are saying is that one is called matter, that is one eye, and the other is called consciousness. And you will find various kind of words used to describe this. For example, matter is called anatma and consciousness is called atma. Matter is also sometimes referred to as prakriti, as also in these verses, matter is going to be referred to as prakriti. Consciousness is given the name as purusha. And again in chapter 7, Krishna calls matter as apara prakriti, which means lower prakriti, and he calls consciousness as para prakriti. And then again in chapter 13 of the Gita, Krishna refers to matter as kshetra, which means field, and consciousness as kshetraknya. You see the word kshetra is here also and it's also here. The difference only is the word nya, which means knower. Knower of what? Knower of the field. But whatever terminology is used, ultimately, basically what the scriptures are telling us, there are only two entities in this whole creation. One is called matter, the other is called consciousness. This is called the higher eye and this is called the lower eye. The small eye and the big eye. So that is the essence of the teachings of the Upanishads, and this is what basically is being repeated here in verse number 27. And what is the difference, since there are two components in us, what is the difference between matter and consciousness? There are many differences. One is matter is what we call perishable. Matter is subject to arrival and departure, whereas consciousness is imperishable. It is eternal. It is not subject to arrival and departure. Secondly, matter is restricted to space. Our body, this matter can only be in one location, whereas consciousness is all pervading. It is not bound by space. So it is inside the body and it is also pervading everywhere in the world. Number three, the actions are performed by, all our actions are performed by matter or consciousness? All our actions are performed by
consciousness.
All our actions are performed by matter or consciousness? Don't say it doesn't matter. Why matter? Because what is matter? Matter is this body-mind complex. Our whole body-mind complex is nothing but made of the five elements called, and it is all called matter. Therefore, what is the role of the consciousness?
To question the action of what the control.
It doesn't question. it
observes.
It is the silent witness. Okay, it is a silent witness. So matter is performing all the actions. Consciousness is the silent witness. But it doesn't mean that consciousness is not required in our action. Why? If you say consciousness is a silent witness, not responsible for action, does it mean we don't require consciousness? Then why do we need consciousness?
The light force.
Life force. That means it provides the consciousness to activate this body. Because without consciousness, we cannot do any action. Beautiful example is given as the light in this hall. The light is not responsible for what we are doing in this hall, whether we are reading the Gita or we are reading comic books. It does not dictate our actions. But without this light, if the light is switched off, we are unable to perform any actions. So light merely blesses our actions. It does not dictate or control our action. That is the relationship between matter and consciousness. So we can see that there are many, many differences. One is mortal, one is immortal. One is subject to time and space, one is not subject to time and space. One is responsible for actions, the other is a witness consciousness. So that is what the scriptures are telling us, that there are two components in us. Now, knowing that I am made of two components, what is my duty now? What do I need to know? What do I need to learn? Since I know that I am a mixture of matter and consciousness, what do I need to do now?
How to make the two into one?
How to make the two into one? How to increase consciousness? What else? Your question is to ask, which am I in reality? If I accept my identity as matter, as this body, as this mind, as this intellect, or am I in reality the eternal consciousness? If I accept my identity as this body, mind, intellect, then what happens? Every transaction that I go through in life, I am affected. If I accept this body as my reality, as my real nature, as the lower I. But if I shift my identification away, my attachment from this body to the higher I, then I am able to observe everything as a silent witness. So one gets affected, one does not get affected. The difference is, you do not change, you do not become a different person, you do not take on a different body. What happens? You only move from lower identity, you identify, instead of the lower identity, you shift your identification to the higher identity. That is the purpose of all the scriptures, trying to move our focus away from being attached to the body, but be attached to the higher consciousness, which is not an easy process, but that is basically the goal of all the scriptural teachings. So here also, in verse number 27, Krishna says, if you look at the last line, karta aham iti manyate. Manyate means this deluded person, the ignorant person who accepts the lower I, the body-mind complex, as his real identity. What does he say? Karta aham. I am the doer. All the actions are done by me. Everything is done by me. I am the very performer of all actions. But in reality, what does Krishna say? If you look at the first line of verse number 27, Prakriti, and look at the second line, Guna. Prakriti. What is Prakriti? What is Guna? What is Prakriti? Matter. What is matter? Body, mind, complex. Or what Swami Chinmayananda calls as body, mind, intellect, BMI. Right? So this whole body, mind plus intellect is nothing but matter. Matter is Prakriti. But What and what is prakriti? Prakriti is matter. Matter is what? Matter is inert. It has no life, right? So what is it that is causing my actions? If this pen has got no life, why is it able to move? Okay, what made you come here? Correct, exactly. So the second word used in that line is gunas. Where are the gunas? Are the gunas in matter or in consciousness?
Matter.
They are in matter. The gunas are only in matter. The gunas are never in consciousness. Consciousness is pure, devoid of all gunas. So these three gunas, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, depending on which is more dominant, will drive all our action. Now therefore, who is doing the actions? We know consciousness is not doing actions. We know matter cannot do action because it is inert. Therefore, who is doing the actions? Who is driving your actions? It's the gunas. It's because of your sattvic gunas you came here. So, if you have rajasic gunas, you will be somewhere else. If you have tamasic gunas, you will be somewhere else. So, it is the gunas that are driving your actions. But what does the ignorant person say? Who doesn't understand how this functions, how this body functions? I am the doer. Karta aham iti manyate. This body is doing all the action. Not realizing this body is inert, it has got no life. Not realizing it is the gunas which are causing my actions, but I accept that I am doing all that. So here he says, gunai karmani sarvasa. All the actions are done by nothing but the three gunas. If we keep on understanding this, that all my actions are driven by the three gunas, if we don't understand this, then what happens? In the third line he says, ahamkara vimudatma. That person is a vimudatma, is a totally deluded person. Is a person who does not, when we say a person is deluded, it means he is a human being who does not use his intellect, who does not use his intelligence to understand and understand what you call, what the scriptures are telling us. That every action is done by gunas. So such a person is called ahamkara. Ahamkara means ego. Ego means identification with this body. The minute I identify with this body, I identify with all the actions this body does. I identify with all my possessions. I identify with my family. So the whole spiritual process is how to shift this identification away from the lower I to the higher I. And that can only be accomplished through self-knowledge. Atma-gyan or Brahma-gyan. So that's why when we chant this chapter, at the end of this chapter, when we chant chapter 12, what do you chant? Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishad Su Brahma Vidya. This Gita is nothing but a Brahma Vidya. It is Vidya, knowledge about what? Brahma. What is Brahma? Brahma is consciousness. Atma is Brahma. Brahma is consciousness. So this, every chapter is pointing us to that. Understand and accept your reality. There's a story told about a beggar who's sitting on a pavement and whole life he's been begging, you know, with a begging bowl. People put in 10 cents, 20 cents, from morning to night he's sitting down and begging and living a miserable existence. Sometimes no money for food, no shelter from rain and sun, whole life he's just begging. One day a person comes and tells him that I found a map. Where you're sitting and where you're begging, underneath there is a whole treasure of gold. All you have to do is dig about 20 feet, you'll find all the gold and you can give up begging for the rest of your life. And you know what the beggar says? I'm so tired every day begging, I got so busy begging, I got no time to dig for this gold. And you know, we are the beggars. We are begging around the whole world for a little bit morsel of happiness, peace and comfort and security, when actually the eternal happiness lies where?
Within.
but we are so tired running around everywhere in the world, we got no time to stop and turn inward and look at the treasure within. So this is what the scriptures are trying to awaken us. Awaken to your own glory. Awaken to your own nature. Nobody has taken it away from you. You have willingly given it up. You have given away the greatest treasure. So here he says, Karta aham iti manyate. The deluded one thinks I am the doer. Okay. Therefore, what is the right attitude to take? In verse number 28 here, Krishna tells us about the other side of this deluded person. And he uses the word tattvavit in verse number 28. Tattvavit means the knower. Knower of what? The knower who knows that I am a mixture of two elements. I am Prakriti and I am Purusha. This body is made of two elements. And this tattvavit understands the difference between matter and consciousness. In fact, we have all gone through all the different qualities of matter and consciousness. If you recall, where did we go through all this? Chapter? No, we have gone through it.
11.
No, we only finished 2 chapters. Chapter 2, which verses? The very important verses in chapter 2. See, I did even summary of chapter 2 also everybody forgot. You remember verses 11 to 25. The essence of this knowledge of the self or knowledge of Atman. Krishna gave us all the various differences, the difference between the body and consciousness. So that verses 11 to 25 is where we gain the knowledge. So tattvavit is one who knows, who understands that I am a mixture of two components and what is the difference between these two components. And thus Krishna says, such a person who knows the difference between Atma and matter and one who understands what? Guna Karma Vibhaga Yoga. He understands that it is the three gunas in us that are driving all our actions. So, I understand very clearly, one part of me is matter, one part is consciousness, and all my actions are motivated by the three gunas. Guna, karma, vibhaga, yoga. And what else should I also understand? That all our activities from the time we get up in the morning till the time we sleep in the night, all my actions are driven by my gunas. All your actions are driven by also gunas, right? So therefore, how do you define life? How do you define our everyday life? What is life therefore? From morning to night, we are going about driven by our gunas. We are meeting people who are also acting because of their gunas. Therefore, how do you define life simply? Guna guneshu vartanta. Life is nothing but a constant interaction between gunas. Your gunas reacting with another person's gunas. Another person's gunas reacting with your gunas. The whole life is nothing but a series of interaction of gunas. But who am I in reality? I am the consciousness who is the witness of all these interactions which are going on. If I can change my focus and understand on this consciousness, then I am no more affected by these gunas. If somebody is shouting at you, if I accept I am this body, somebody calls you a monkey or donkey, what happens? You get immediately disturbed. But if I can move one step back and look at it and life as a play of gunas between gunas, what happens? I just become a witness to all these actions. What happens to the nature of my mind? It is not affected. So that is the difference between an ignorant person and a wise person. But that is a whole process of changing our thinking pattern. That we must understand that the whole interaction between people and objects is nothing but guna guneshu vartanta. if we can come to this understanding, to this higher understanding, we can observe the whole play of life also. It becomes a pleasure. You are not affected. Therefore, Krishna says, iti matva na sajjate. Na sajjate means such a person does not get attached, such a person does not get agitated, such a person does not get irritated, angry, etc. Because I am able to observe everything is a play of gunas. Just the same way, as I have explained before, if you are passing by a house and a dog starts barking at you, do you get irritated or do you start barking back at the dog? Why do you not get irritated?
It is his nature.
You understand the nature of all the animals. If there is a snake in the cage, would you jump into the cage? You know it is the nature of the snake to attack you. That the snake can be dangerous to you. So you keep your distance. If you see a rabbit, what do? You go and pet the rabbit. You know the rabbit will not harm you. You play according to the nature of the animal. Similarly, all the human beings are what? They have different natures. They are reacting because of their natures. If somebody is barking at you, means what? His nature is rajasic nature. We should understand that and not get irritated and not get carried away. Once we understand that, then our mind also does not get agitated. We understand it is the nature of that person. Why should I react to that nature of that person? If my nature is sattvic, why should I react to the rajasic nature of that person? So, guna guneshu vartanta, my nature is sattvic. That person's nature is rajasic. It is my sattvic nature interacting with that rajasic nature. I should not get affected. So, here, iti matva na sanchati. Such a person is not affected. Yes.
So in that case, sometimes would it appear that you appear cold if you are not exposing your feelings? Say example, okay, there's a massive tragedy. Say like you take the airline's tragedy. And because you say that it doesn't, that you want to be in that level where you don't want to be affected.
Mm.
So you don't display anything. So you say, well, that it's happened and that's it. Is that how we are supposed to be in a human intellect level? Or, let's call this an outpouring of feelings and emotion. I would think that that is the right thing to do. But when you do that, you're bringing down your level to, again, attachment. You feel, you know, you feel sorry for this, you feel sorry. But at the same time, according to this, you are supposed to maintain that level of detachment.
Correct.
And so how do we go about that fine line? Trying not to be cold, at the same time, trying to be, that you show support, you show your emotions.
See, there's a saying, having emotions is a virtue. Being emotional is a vice. So having emotions is not wrong. That means I am in control of my emotions. I cry, I laugh, I sing, I do whatever I want, but I am in control of my emotion. But if I allow the emotions to control me, then I have lost all control of myself. So a jnani is one who has emotions, but does not get carried away by emotions. I can express sorrow, I can express laughter, but it doesn't mean I go into depression. You know, I'm totally affected and overpowered by my emotion. I can laugh, I can cry, but I don't carry it along with me forever and ever and ever. That is our problem. Our problem is not emotion. The emotions overpowers. So having emotion is a virtue. Jnani is not a robot. He can laugh, he can cry. But being emotional means being carried away by my emotion. I remember them again and again and again, and I cry again and again and again. That is where our problem comes in. So I'm able to show my emotion and then I'm able to withdraw. Right? Otherwise we keep carrying it with you. It overpowers us. That is our problem. Okay, so we will stop here. Any other questions? No questions, then we'll come back next week and resume verse number 29. Okay. And with the prayer. Vasudeva sutam devam kansa janura martanam devaki paramanandam krishnam mande.